The beatification of Father John Sullivan will take place later this year, maybe September, and it'll be in Dublin. Father John Sullivan, whose tomb is in Gardiner Street Parish Church in Dublin, where I was parish priest for 12 years, there's a constant stream of people coming in to pray through his intercession. And you get stories of great healings, cures, some of them rather dramatic, but of people who've been helped a lot by his life, the example of his life, but by his intercession after death. So we have been hoping for this for a long time, as we joke a bit and say the person least affected by beatification will be Father John himself, who has had no interest in any honours. But it's highlighting the fact that his life is, as they say in the terminology, he lived the Christian life in a heroic way. Now, for him, it was helping the sick. He grew up in Dublin, in the Church of Ireland, and he became a Catholic in his 30s.
I was going to say, I mean, do many people know that he started out at the Church of Ireland and then later became Catholic?
I think they do, but they mightn't realise that it was a difficult thing for him to do. John Sullivan made a number of changes in his life as Archbishop Michael Jackson, the Church of Ireland Archbishop, highlights. One was he was from this part of Ireland, and he went to school in the north. He also left Dublin in his 30s and went to work in London. He also then became a Catholic. So there's three boundaries crossed at a time when people didn't do that in Ireland. So he's a bit of an example of a very practical ecumenism. I don't think he actually would have known too much about ecumenism in whatever church he was in. He was faithful to it.
And why did he make a change?
Well, his mother was a Catholic, and his mother had a strong influence on his life. His father was Protestant, and in those days in Ireland, the boys were brought up in the religion of the father and the girls in the religion of the mother. He had a deep devotion to his mother, and through her got a great devotion to St. Monica and St. Augustine. So he would attribute his turning over, whatever we call it, conversion to the Roman Catholic Church on the prayers of his mother. There was a tragedy in the family as well that had a big impact on him. His brother was drowned off a docky in Dublin, and his body was never found. And that was a huge cross for his mother. And in fact, we could say that when he is blessed John Sullivan, maybe he'd be a very good patron of the missing. And for those listening to us, if any of your family are missing or have never been found, you have somebody who would know what that's like.
I mean, do you think that channeled his work and his desire to want to help sick people, or to want to help people who, I guess, were, you know, not experiencing such a good life, you know, that he had a sort of a sympathy with people like that?
It could be. Now, it's very strange. There is absolutely, he left very little behind him in writing. And there's a gap. We know very little about his life between leaving Ireland to study law in Britain and becoming a Catholic. We know he travelled a lot. He had a social life. He was known as the best dressed man in Dublin, but he also travelled to Mount Athos in Greece. And then he discovered the Catholic Church a bit, listening to a catechism class on holidays in County Cork. And he went to the children and asked, could he borrow this book? He kept the book for a week, and he never forgot the little girl who gave it to him. He sent her a card very often. But in that way, his real felt interest in the Catholic Church seemed to start. And
I mean, what was it that stood out about him? I mean, there would have been a lot of people at the time, priests and religious, who would have been helping the sick and dealing with people who are on the fringes of society. So what is it about him that stands out particularly?
What would stand out is his care for the sick and his devotion to visiting people who are very ill. Why do people pray to him? They feel they're helped in their peace of mind and heart by coming to his tomb in Gardiner Street. That, of course, will now become a shrine when he's beatified. They come to pray for help, and many people have had many cures. I've forgotten exactly what the cure was, but the cure for the beatification was a lady in Belvedere Road near Gardiner Street who was cured.
Yes, of course, because he had to have, in order to be beatified, they had to show a miracle. So the miracle for him was the cure.
Exactly, yeah.
But you say that this was quite common, or that a lot of people found him a very curative presence, or even if they didn't find a cure, they became more resolved or more resigned and more at ease with death.
Well, there certainly were very dramatic cures and big crowds. There's a monthly mass in Gardiner Street on the third Saturday of the month at 1 o'clock. There's an annual mass every February in Gardiner Street and in Clongowes around the time of his birthday, which is the 8th of May this year. And then we'll have a few publications coming out to mark the occasion. He's well known in Kildare area and the Dublin area and also in Newry. So there's a lot of people up there, and they come down in a busload to the Mass in Dublin. So there's those devotions to him that spread really by word of mouth and also by past pupils of the school he taught in.
Yeah. Well, of course, if anybody heard rumour or heard anything about a cure, they're going to try. People who are unwell will try anything. I mean, they'll hold on to any bit of hope.
They do, and he does give a lot of hope to people. And I would say as well, when you read his life, and especially through the accident to his brother, he didn't wear his feelings on his sleeve, and either his joy or his sorrow. But they say that that did affect him a lot, and that obviously his mother never recovered from that. His father was a very devoted man to him, very loving father. But when his father died, he actually left Dublin and went to London. But as I say, we have very little from him. His favourite quote that we hear from him is to take every day in instalments and be grateful.
Yeah. That's a good tip for everybody, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah.
And, you know, you say he went to London, he studied law. Did he ever practice as a lawyer?
He did. He practiced as a barrister for a number of years in London. And when he came back from his travels to Mount Athos, he became friendly with some convents, especially who worked among the poor. And very often he would leave in money. He was probably quite wealthy, never leaving his name. And one sister said, the next time he comes, keep him in the parlour, give him a cup of tea, I want to see who he is. And then he visited the sick a lot. And the nuns were praying a lot for him that he would become a priest and a Jesuit. So beware of the nuns' prayers.
Why do you think they wanted him to become a Jesuit in particular?
Well, they saw something in him, and they probably knew a lot of Jesuits, and they were great people then, and as they are now, for encouraging somebody, and they'd often send them our way.
Funny, isn't it? I mean, because, I mean, I suppose some people would say that the Jesuitical ideas often have similarities to Protestant or Church of Ireland teachings, or that at least they're often considered to be the closest. So do you think that was a sort of a comfortable ecumenical centre for him, if you like?
Yes. I mean, some people, I went to a school once and I was asked were the Jesuits Catholics, but there was always a great encouragement to freedom of thought in our schools. And I remember in sixth year in school, we had a priest there, and he said, question things, boys, don't take it for granted. And he really helped us to question, so he probably would have got an initial opening welcome. Also, he went to Farm Street in London for instruction to join the Catholic Church, and that was a Jesuit church also. So I'm not sure what other contact he had. I haven't read of any contact with Irish Jesuits, though he grew up actually near to Gardiner Street Church in Eccles Street in Dublin. So I'm not sure what would have attracted him particularly to the Jesuits.
Well, he came from a very well-off family. Was that considered strange, or did his family consider it strange? Did they feel like he was throwing it all away to go off and join the Jesuits and heal the sick?
It was very strange. That's another big change he made in his life, from a very wealthy, comfortable way of life, which he seemed to enjoy with a lot of travel, to a very poor way of life. But people saw something in him, because another lawyer friend of his was told, did you hear John Sullivan has become a Catholic? And the man said, no matter what church he was in, he'd be a saint. So they saw something in him like that. But it must have been, now remember, it was in his mid-30s that he made a lot of those changes, so people had probably got used to him, and he was a bit off the scene in Dublin. But it certainly would have been a big change. And he wore changes very lightly.
For Irish people, for the Jesuits, this is hugely significant.
It is, and I think we need to refocus on the ecumenical side of his life, and that his example, in a very quiet way, of crossing boundaries is still very important. North-South, Catholic, Protestant, things are much better than they were, but they can always be a bit better, and he's a patron of that, certainly. Mm-hmm.